And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 762. We're here to recap the wild week 6 fab that took place across the NFBC. Money out the window. Nobody cares about it anymore. All that fun stuff. We'll see if these guys are even worth it in the end. That's the best part about this. But to help me recap some news and all the fab that took place, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Unfortunately, watching the Yankees lose right now, but they have some time to come back. And we were talking about how good Sagano looks. His splitter looks pretty nasty. I didn't think it was that good of a pitch, but apparently either the Yankees stink or he switched it up a little bit.
Yeah, he must have switched something up because we were talking off air that I liked what I saw in spring with the nastiness. Drafted him pretty much everywhere for free, it felt like. Already dropped him in like all my 12s because he couldn't strike out a soul. And tonight he's striking out all the Yankees. So this is the moments where I like to say hashtag cuz baseball. That's what it feels like to me. Now, let's see. If Sagano keeps ripping it together, then maybe I should have been more patient. But in a 12, it's tough to be patient with that kind of profile at the time when he's like already your sixth or seventh pitcher. So we'll see. But yeah, very impressive stuff to your point. Very, very impressive. We're going to talk about some more impressive stuff soon, the amount of money people spent on some a fantasy game we play. We'll get to that shortly. But let's talk about some news and notes real quick, Ben. And we'll kick it off with the fun down in Los Angeles. They're already missing Blake Snell for another probably month or so, at least, before he comes back. Now Tyler Glasnow exited his start over the weekend after one inning pitched with a shoulder injury. Now the reports on Monday say he's likely to go to the IL. I was about to go, no S, Sherlock. Why are we faking this is what I'm trying to figure out. The part that really stood out to me, not the fact he got hurt. Like, I think we all kind of expected Tyler Glasnow to get hurt. We probably thought more, UCL, because it's pretty much already broken, not the shoulder. But the reason the shoulder's hurt, this is the part that got me, is after the game, Glasnow said he's been dealing off and on with some shoulder soreness because he's changing his delivery to try to limit the elbow injury. So this is what we talked about, Ben, you, me, Ryan, everybody talks about it. About all these guys trying to do something different to kind of placate something that's already hurt, and they get more hurt in theory. So a long-winded way of saying, what's your thoughts on this? Ben Kasperius is rumored to be getting stretched out. Tony Gonsolin comes back this week. I think Landon Knack's still a few weeks away. This happens every year in LA. They sign all these guys, Ben, and then it doesn't take long before there's a lot of vacancy at the end, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I have to start remembering it and the offseason that no matter who they sign, they're all going to get hurt still on the Dodgers because it happens each year. Like you said, it's in the Discord for you and Ryan's Patreon. I shared their rotation, which is currently down to 3 guys officially on roster resource, and then all the injured starters per roster resource for the Dodgers. And it's, probably going to be Kasperius. Is that how you pronounce his name? I think he was opening before. And yeah, Gonsolin, I went after Gonsolin, I think, or in some leagues, where he's available. I don't think he was drafted in a lot of spots, but yeah, with Glasnow, this is why I don't draft him ever. Even at his, I had him ranked well below where he was going at ADP this year. Like, I had him back end of the hundreds, just so I would make sure I wouldn't draft him, because I mean, he's 32 now. I think people still think he's kind of young, but he's 32 almost, Glasnow, and it's just been a history of fragility. And no one should be shocked that this is happening right now, but here we are.
Yeah, not shocking. I was telling people on Breakfast with Bubba and even in the Discord, I'm like, if you draft a glass now, I get you. You saw the upside, but you're also playing with borrowed time, essentially. He already has a UCL injury. Now he's got the shoulder injury. Like I said at the beginning, I think it's comical. They're like, yeah, we think we're going to have to put him on the IL. Yeah, you're probably going to have to put him on the IL. I saw actually a tweet from like multiple Dodgers beat writers before we started. I believe his name is Noah Davis, was in the locker room. He's from AAA. I don't know much about him, I'll be totally honest. I'll look it up later on. But all of the tweets from the beat writer said, Noah Davis is in the locker room. The only way he can play is if someone goes on the IL. Do with this what you wish. Like, so it's just kind of like the Dodgers doing Dodgers things. They'll wait till, locks already happened, but in their mind, they'll wait till post-lock to announce these things, even though they already know what's happening. But yeah, Glasnow, I guess wait and see. You're not dropping them just yet, but it's not pretty. And I'm very interested in Ben Kasperius. I'm probably butchering that. I apologize. And also Tony G, if those are available. All right. Jordan Westberg to the IL with a hamstring injury. He missed the game on Sunday with said injury. He's been battling all kinds of little bumps and bruises. Ben, they finally put him on the IL, which I don't know if it's because the hamstring injury is that serious. I haven't seen the results there. Or if it's just like, hey, this dude's beat up. Let's give him like 10 days to figure it out and like get back to normal. To me, it feels like it's just a minimal stay because they didn't bring Mayo up. What's your thoughts on this Westberg IL situation?
Yeah, well, I'm not invested in Westberg at all. So I've been kind of oblivious to what's been going on with him. But looking at his stats, yeah, it's been a rough year for him. 217 average. No steals. I mean, you're hoping for maybe a handful with Westberg. Four homers isn't terrible. That's like a 24 pace if he repeats that every month. And yeah, I mean, so look at, I guess, Matt Wallner is another example where it didn't seem like there's nothing about it. And it seems like it's going to linger into potentially June where I still have Wallner. But like with Westberg, I don't know. But I guess to your point with Mayo, I could see that being the case if they don't think it'll be a long stint for Westberg. Looking at the Orioles roster, they have Urias, who they've loved the last few years. Ramon Urias has been their third baseman when Westberg wasn't playing third base. It feels like a lot. And they have Mateo. Emmanuel Rivera has played a lot in the past. He just got called up. So I guess if Urias struggles and it goes longer than the minimum stay for Westberg, maybe we do see Mayo. But I mean, if Mayo's back, there's no room for Mayo. I mean, even if Westberg's back, there's no room for Mayo. But yeah, hold on to Westberg for now until we get more info. And yeah, so two more stashes we have now, Glass now and Westberg. That's what we needed, was more injured guys. Yeah,
more stashes, more injured guys, more stashes. And for those that have not listened yet, I will keep you updated on Breakfast with Bubba whenever I find this stuff out. Hopefully we'll get some stuff tonight for tonight's recording. But they'll probably do an MRI or whatnot on the old hammy there to give us a grade 1, 2, 3. Hopefully it's grade 1, and we can move on from there. Dodgers just made it official. Glass now to the IL, shoulder soreness. So as expected, that is a thing now. All right, Tyler O'Neill, another Oriole to the IL with a neck injury. That's kind of rinse repeat with Tyler O'Neill. It's kind of like saying Corey Seager is going to go to the IL because, you know, that's what they do. I don't have a whole lot. He's been struggling this year, like big time. Any thoughts on O'Neill? I guess you play primarily 15, so he's probably a hold for you. Maybe not. In 12s, there's a discussion where you could debate dropping a Tyler O'Neill, I think. What's your thoughts on the Tyler O'Neill situation?
Well, I don't have Tyler O'Neill anywhere, so I can't really answer what I would do, but he is 91% rostered in the main event. So he has been dropped in a handful of leagues already, O'Neill. Yeah, it's been rough. You know, like even the 2 weeks before this past week, he only had 12 at bats in week 3 and week 4. So not even playing a lot. With a neck, you never really know what it could be a nerve, like a disc thing, or it's kind of scary, especially when someone like him who he's so like he lifts so much and he could very, very well could have like aggravated the lifting or something. Who knows? But he's someone I'd be more likely to drop, honestly, compared to Westberg and Glass now, just because, I mean, yeah, O'Neill has the upside, but he does have his downside that we've seen. I mean, he's already really, he had that one great year in 2021, and then last year was kind of a bounce back, but still hit only 241. Didn't even have twice as many RBIs as homers for O'Neill, and I don't know. But I mean, I try to hold on to him if I could, but if it's tough with your bench spots, I get cutting him.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like his numbers: 215, two home runs over 18 games, 74 plate appearances, 28% K rate. His line's almost mimicking his 2022 season because he has a 273 BABIP this year. That year he had 277. That year he hit 226 with 14 homers. Did steal 14 bags, which is nice, but still only played 96 games. Like, that seems like a streaming spot I'd rather use. Go get like a Jesus Sanchez, a Kyle Stowers before he got picked up everywhere. But that kind of, you know, profile would fill in nicely where Ton is and help you a lot more when all things are said and done. Logan Gilbert to the IL. He's got a forearm injury. He's going to be shut down from throwing for 2 weeks, Ben, then be reevaluated. I said on Breakfast with Bubba, at best, he's out a month. That's if he's clean after 2 weeks, ramps back up. At best, he's out a month is the way I look at it. Logan Evans got called up, looked pretty good in his first start. What's your thoughts on this Gilbert situation? And if you want to elaborate any farther with the rest of it, the floor is yours.
Did you say forearm or elbow?
I will check it out. Maybe it's elbow. Like, to me,
they have changed it to elbow per his player. Okay, so they changed
it up. It's all the same to me when it comes to what. Yeah. Because he left the game with a forearm injury, so now they're calling it an elbow. Okay, there you go. Fair enough.
Yeah, so not good. I guess it's another win for the hardest thrower, a visual that gets tossed around on Twitter, because Gilbert was the one that was everyone was saying, oh no, he's safe still, even though he's throwing like 97 on average. I mean, I kind of fell for it too, but I took Logan and I think one or two spots this year. I think in DCs though, so I'm kind of stuck with him anyway. But yeah, it's not ideal. I think it's only a grade one, but it's still the flexor strain, which isn't Tommy John, but it could take him out for a long time if it's bad enough. I'm not sure how long. Well, yeah, 2 weeks before being reevaluated is kind of scary as well. Yep. So maybe it's like a month he'll be out by the time he gets ramped back up at a minimum. They're saying May 18th on NFBC. That's kind of pushing it. I don't know. I think he's optimistic, he's gonna have view right there. It is. Yeah. I think it's not really accounting for him ramping back up and getting ready to go back into the rotation right away. Like he could start pitching by May 18th for sure, but I don't think he's back in the rotation at that point. I have not looked at Logan Evans too much, but I did write down his name for when it comes to Fab this later in the week. So I'll be looking to potentially add him. Looking at the Mariners rotation. Well, it looks like Emerson Hancock sticking around longer potentially. And
yeah,
I was in on him, but I wasn't too aggressive.
Emerson Hancock was the fourth most added player in main events this past week and tells you everything you need to know about that situation.
Yeah, I did have him on bid list. I didn't get him, but yeah, it's dicey. I don't really know too much about Logan Evans right now, but I'll definitely do a little more research as the week goes on.
Yeah, Evans is a guy that's had a mid to low threes ERA of late, through 107 innings at Double A last year. Just a brief stuff, because I know people are like Corbin Young talked about him on my Mariners preview. Is pretty hyped on him. He actually tweeted something out. If anybody wants to look, I retweeted it. Some more info on Logan Evans, which is pretty sharp stuff. In 2024, he had a 22% K rate, a 9% walk. But this past year, at 25 innings at AAA, 21.1% K rate, but a 3.7% walk rate. So that improvement in command is what you want to see. Dude's like 25 years old. So there's some pluses there. I could dig in deeper on some of the stuff from Ryan Sheet. But, you know, optimism deserved. How good can it be? Great question. None of us will know. But they're desperate because, like, I do PT tomorrow for the AL West, and I try digging in even deeper because they tried Jonathan Diaz. They tried Luis F. Castillo. None of those have been great. They have another option down there that's pitching well so far, but he's more of a ground ball pitch to contact guy. So I think bringing up Evans, it's like, okay, we might lose Gilbert for a month to 2 months. Let's see what this kid's got instead of just like a Band-Aid replacement. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. He's got some I can't remember who he's facing this week. But, we'll have to see how that plays out because he could be a very popular target this week.
He is facing the Rangers, Logan Evans.
Which is not a bad matchup. They're not that good right now. So that is like a very interesting option indeed.
And real quick on Evans, I pulled up his minor league stats. This year in the PCL, he was surviving a 3.86 ERA, 25 innings. But last year, I'm looking at his strikeout to walk, and it kind of is a little scary. He had 107 innings, 42 walks, only 98 strikeouts for Logan Evans. And he got away with a 3.20 ERA and a 1.18 whip. I felt like those numbers feel very lucky with that strikeout to walk ratio in that many innings. So just be careful. But, I mean, he improved this year. It was 23-4K to walk in the 25 innings in AAA before he got called up. So, but it's a much smaller sample, of course. So just be cautious. See how that start goes.
Most definitely. All right, this one really doesn't have a whole lot to say. It's just a shame. Luke Kuechel, like wherever he was left by midweek, everyone's like, I'm spending a fortune on this guy come Fab because he already had five steals. He's hitting third or fourth every day for the Twins. He's going to become a second base eligible player pretty soon. And then on Friday, gets hit in the forearm, fractured forearm. There's still no timetable for this, but just doing quick math, it's usually minimum 4 to 6 weeks, closer to 2 months for this situation because he's got to let the bone heal. There's no timetable for that, essentially, and then kind of ramp back up. So obviously we're not thinking about adding him again. Just wanted to throw that out there. If you had any other thoughts on maybe would you target Brooks Lee, Edward Julian, how would you approach, I guess, second base for the Twins?
Well, Kuechel's down to 25% rostered in the main, so he's definitely a drop. I actually had been playing Brooks Lee in a main event. He's been doing much better this time around, it feels like, compared to last year. I keep seeing this name Mickey Gasper, and it just makes me laugh. I feel like, dude, I feel like he can't be good.
Dude, it's so funny because on DraftKings the other day, like a Saturday or Sunday, he was min price $2,000, hitting fifth for the Twins. He was catcher, third base eligible. I'm like, who is this man? And it made me like actually look into him a little more, weirdly enough, because if you look on Roster Resource, he's just the platoon DH bat, where kind of, you know, that's where Keuchel was doing work at DH and second base. So I guess he's partially filling in there. It looks like Edward Julian's played the last two games at second base, if that matters to anybody.
Yeah, I would not be looking at Mickey Gasper to add. Definitely like Brooks Lee in 15s. Yeah, like I said, I have him. And then when I was checking box scores the last couple of days, I've noticed Jonah Bride has been playing. Dude. And he's in like 500 or something. Or he was
RBI tonight.
For them.
Yeah. I laughed out that you mentioned that because like in DC's, he was like a boring, but I'm like, oh, he's gonna play every day for the Marlins. I'm gonna take him like a pick five something. So I have a lot of Jonah Bride, sadly enough. And then he gets DFA'd. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And then they pick him up and he's playing a lot, like you said. I'm just like, okay, this will actually work in a pinch. One other thing I want to put on top of this, though, with Keuchel out of the DH spot, Ryan Jeffers has he's played the last four games. He DH versus a lefty, caught the three games versus a righty. Instead of like more of a platoon situation with Christian Vasquez, Jeffers is finding more playing time at catcher. Just something to think about if some people gave up on him. He went deep again on Monday. So he's playing more and he's starting to hit more regular, if that makes sense. Crazy how that works when you get comfortable at the plate. But remember how good Jeffers could be. So just want to throw that catcher nugget in there for you guys. Garrett Mitchell to the IL for the Brewers. I was already really close to dropping him as it was. It's a grade one oblique strain, so it's minor, they're saying, Ben. But he's been so bad, it should just be like, go to the AAA after a situation, potentially. Daz Cameron came up. The problem is they really don't have anybody else. Like, he's at least their fourth outfielder, Garrett Mitchell. He's not going to AAA, but what's your thoughts on this situation?
Well, he's roughly rostered in half of main events, and we knew about the news going into Feb on Sunday, so it kind of has a little more weight there when he's still in half of main events, roughly. Looking at his stats, yeah, it's been 25 Ks and 68 at-bats is not too good for Mr. Mitchell. It's I could see dropping him because he was dropped last year, and I overshot the market when I tried adding him when he was coming back from whatever the injury was last year, Mitchell. So, yeah, I if you don't have any IL spots, I think you can drop him. And then as for the replacement, let me get the Brewers looked up right here.
They called up Daz Cameron. It's nothing special.
He's not even – yeah, well, it looks like Jake Bowers is the starter over him, and we do not want to mess with Jake Bowers. It's just kind of a hole that's been left. I mean, Mitchell was kind of like a hole anyway, but now it's even a bigger hole, I guess.
Yes. We don't have to talk about this. I just want to let listeners know, in case we're living under a rock, JT Jen to the IL, again to the IL. With his injury, that's a bummer. The A's have not named their fifth starter yet. Keep an eye on that because they actually have some interesting options depending on how they want to go about it. Well, some would intrigue me. Some wouldn't. I want to wait and see what they do before I get too excited, but there are some plays there. I want to ask you about this, though. Let's wrap it up before we talk Fab here as the Yankees are making a comeback, Ben. So you got that going for you.
Well,
we got closer chaos taking place. That'll be a theme when we talk Fab because lots of closers – currently closers are getting picked up. This past week, basically the last like 4 days, Emmanuel Clase has been removed from high leverage situations till otherwise noticed. Kate Smith has three saves last week. And Devin Williams, we were on the show last week, both very confident he would not lose his job because the Yankees wouldn't do that. And to me, the reasons made sense. Well, Devin Williams was even worse after we talked about him last week. And I don't think they had a choice at that point. They're like, yeah, Devin Williams is out of the closing role for now. They have to say that. What's your takes on these two? Whatever, like Luke Weaver, Kate Smith seem to be the guys, but like you're not dropping Clase and Williams, but like how are you approaching this, I guess?
I think I sat Williams in a DC.
Yes, I sat him everywhere. I had him. Yes.
Yeah, I forget who. I'm playing some shaky guys over him, and that's saying a lot.
I think I put Cade Povichin over him. That might have been the guy we were talking about.
Yeah, I'm not going to check my lineup now, but yeah, I did sit Williams. So Bubba and I are sitting Williams in DCs or wherever we have them. I guess with both teams, they have good enough relievers behind these guys where they could afford to remove them because Kate Smith's pretty filthy. Weaver's pitching great again. So it's not like they're just being desperate and grabbing any bum off the, out of the bullpen just to be the closer for now. They have legit relievers that are filling in for these guys. So, I mean, I'm glad I don't have any Class A, and I only have, I think, one team with Williams. So, luckily, I'm not stressing too much over this. But, yeah, definitely don't drop these guys. Just, it could be like a week and a half before they're both back in the closer roles. So, it's just... It definitely stinks. You're probably going to fall back unless you were able to grab a replacement this past weekend in Fab. Fall behind in Steve, yeah. That is it.
Well, this is why, like, at least in most of my teams, I had three closers on every roster already. So I was just like, okay, we're sitting with two this week, and we're gonna see how it goes for a little bit and until things change, of course. But yeah, it to say it nicely, not great stuff there. And from Williams, have him benched everywhere. I guess I'm more mad that I was all in on Luke Weaver early in draft season, and they traded for Williams. I didn't even take spec Weaver in DCs at that point, which I'm really mad at myself for at this point. It's all Captain Hindsight, of course, but that's not ideal when you do that. But yeah, I, to your point, sit back, wait. They're going to get their jobs back. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, I'm at DC with Williams. I wanted to take Weaver. I remember saying to myself, I'm going to take Weaver as my first RP, as my RP3. This is that someone beat me to him. It's just he was going so early that it was hard to, even with having Williams on my team, it's hard to spend that early of a pick on a backup closer. But oh well.
Yes, oh well indeed. And now the fun. This is where it gets good. And I'm going to just put a preface out for all this. Everyone, you're allowed to do what you want to do, but we're going to talk some big numbers, and I'm going to say some very sarcastic things throughout the rest of this show. Just be prepared for this, because some of these prices, I kind of actually understand where most people came from. Kind of is the key word there, because oh my God. But we're going to get into it. We're here to recap your week 6 NFBC Fab, folks. For anyone new to the show, we hit up the RotoWire Online Championship 12-team leagues, as most people play 10s and 12s. I even pulled up the 15-team main events for this show. Ben always gives his wonderful advice. He primarily plays 15, but we talk about it all. Give our thoughts on how many people pick this person up, how much they pick this person up for. It's a roller coaster of emotions when we look at this, especially when there's a lot of $1 bids that still get some of these players. So, Ben, let's get after it. The number one most added player in the NFBC Online Championship is the first baseman out of Sacramento, Nick Kurtz. Nick Kurtz was picked up in 230 leagues, Ben, as high as 533, as low as $42, which was pretty impressive, all things considered. Nick Kurtz is sitting versus Patrick Corbin tonight, the second time he sat versus Patrick Corbin since he's been recalled, even though he's not going to be platooned, according to the A's. Nick Kurtz hit 250 with 3 RBIs, no home runs, no extra base hits, essentially, since being called up, Ben, no walks, and he's striking out over 41% of the time. So, what were your thoughts when things got cracking as you're finalizing your bids for Sunday with Nick Kurtz?
Well, I only bid for him on one team, and it was like $88, so I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to get him, so whatever. I have it there just in case. You never know. I think you left out that besides platooning right now versus lefties, Kurtz is also hitting 7th and 8th.
Yes, good point.
When he's in the lineup. Yes. So it's a lot of money for a guy in the lower half who's only has, I forget how many professional at-bats. So it's not a lot for Kurtz. So I don't know if he's the highest by average in, like, at least in the main event. Kurtz, he's got to be up there. I don't have it pulled up right now on Waxman's report. But yeah, this is crazy. I think the highest bid overall in the NFBC was $901 for Kurtz and an OLAC. That is interesting. But look, yeah, 42 is pretty impressive though for a min. Like, that's, there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's only 19 leagues that had him under $100. Yeah, and even the runner up for that 42 was 21. I don't know.
That's why I always say in OCs, I got Chandler Simpson for $9 last week. I got one Ramirez share and one Kurt share out of all this. And yeah, so you just got to try.
Yeah. Actually, one thing I want to do here,
while you're looking at that, Nick Kurtz was the highest average. In main events, average price, he was picked up in 47 leagues. Average was $340.81, max bid of $557.
Yeah, and the other tab he has, so the most money has gone to Kurtz this year in the main event. $16,000 has gone towards him so far. And the one thing I wanted to look up while you were talking was his rest of season projection, which is something I don't usually look at in season as much as I love looking at projections in the off season. So we'll go with So we'll go with Oopsie, which seems like to be the most optimistic. They have 19 homers. Well, them being Jordan Rosenblum, 19 homers for Kurtz, 51 runs, 58 RBIs, a .239 average and 3 steals. So I don't think that's worth $300, but that's just me.
Yeah, I was very nervous. I was putting it like, I think I got him. We'll go over our bids. Mine was like around 130, what I got him for. That was my, like, I was hesitant doing that to begin with, but I knew like, okay, corner infield is getting bad. Let's take a shot, see where it can go. Like I said, I only got him in one place. So like the upside, I get it. But to your point, he's platooning. Devin Williams in the game in the eighth, by the way, in a 4-3 game. So that's good. Still high leverage. We got he's batting seventh or eighth, like you said. I watched most of it at bats. We actually, his opener was the Wednesday night I streamed last week on Playback Live. And I was not overly thrilled. Like there was, I'm no professional scout, Ben, but you played ball. I played ball. Just watching his at bats, there is a clear hole where you can throw your pitches with his swing. Very clear on that one. And the professional scouts should find that. Maybe that's the 42% K rate for you right there. So he's going to have to adjust quickly. Let's put it that way. Can't adjust quickly. Power is undeniable, but you got to hit to stay. And that's the tricky part.
Yeah, in AAA, he had a 26.8% K rate, so it's only probably going to go up.
Yeah, and that's one thing. That's one thing Ryan kept banging home. He's like, or was it you, or is it Ryan, or both?
I think it was Ryan, but I agree with the sentiment.
28% K rate at AAA. It's like that's not an omen for good things coming at the bigs. It's just James Anderson has beaten that into my brain. If they strike out a lot at AAA, probably not changing right away at the bigs. Something to keep in mind.
Yep.
All right. The second most added player of the RotoWire Online Championship, a player that I wanted to get back because I drafted him everywhere and dropped him, and that looked filthy from Devin Williams. Let's go. I'm sorry. People probably love this, but that looked like the old school style bender right there. Or airbender, sorry. Jordan Peck picked up in 224 leagues, as high as 301. Wait for it. As low as a dollar, folks. Welcome to your OC worlds. Jordan Peck was the most added player in main events, 53 leagues, as high as 335, as low as 49. Jordan Peck started out the year horrific, gets sent down. Zach Veen comes up. Zach Veen sucked. He got sent back down. Jordan Peck's back, hits 5 home runs in 3 days. Now everybody wants him again. My DCs are loving him because I picked him up everywhere in draft season. Dropped him everywhere in redrafts. Don't think I got much back, Ben. Where are you at on Jordan Peck? Because I still believe in the skill set. We might have just had his best week.
Probably. It's going to be hard for him to top what he just did. Yeah, I went through my bid list. I think my highest bid for him was $34. Did not get Jordan Peck because of what I bid on him. So in the main event, he went for $6,000 so far this year. I don't know what it is for the week. But, yeah, it's. I think the K rate was one of the things that kind of kept me off of Peck from being more aggressive. Kind of like with the Garrett Mitchell story. Peck has 20 strikeouts and 46 at-bats so far. Yes, Coors will help with that, of course, but I don't know. Last year he hit 188. He had 65 Ks and 170 at-bats. Had 3 homers, 7 steals, so a little pop. Well, actually, not as much pop as he's showing right now. But the K rate amounts to 37% right now with a 318 BABIP. Well, the thing is he has so many home runs that are his hits. That's why the BABIP is that high with the K rate that high too, and it's hitting 261. It's definitely a lot of small samples with Peck. But like, look what they did with Zach Veen, the Rockies. If Peck goes 2-for-20 next week, he's probably going to get sent down the following week or something because they just don't know what they're doing. So that's why I couldn't go more than $34 with my bids. And I thought, okay, well, also, too, you see 5 home runs in a week. His price is going to get jacked up, of course. It's just that he's not going to repeat that, like you said, anytime soon. So it's you're not getting those stats that he just accrued last week when he bid on him. Unfortunately, it's how it works. So I was not going to fall for this again. It's like the Lucy with the football and Charlie Brown. Yep. If you want to chase a Rockies young guy, then go right ahead, but not me.
Yep, I had like $40 to $50 bids in on him, obviously. Not the goal you were looking for there, unfortunately. Frank in the chat says, "Hey, Bubba and Ben and the Ben."
I like that. Ask Ben his thoughts
about Kurtz going for 7-11 in my league and me getting Augustine for 384. We'll get to Augustine because that's, yeah, I'll give my thoughts on the Augustine world. But what's your thoughts on the 7-11, Ben?
Well, I like 7-11.
So it's open 24/7. Kurtz might not be pretty soon, but
yeah, whoever got him is going to be shopping at 7-11 after that. Yeah. It's a little too much. No one is worth that much money. Frank just joined. Rewind the podcast after and hear what we had to say about Kurtz because we weren't too optimistic about him for this year at least. But yeah, Augustine's that's high for me. But I mean, if you haven't spent a lot and you need to pull it, if you have a big hole to catch it, then I understand it. But that's not for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get to Mr. Ramirez here. Picked up in 222 leagues, as high as 469, just below Nick Kurtz for the highest max. Min bid of 12, so no freebies technically. 12 is still pretty darn free. Picked up in 52 mains, as high as 493, as low as 153. So almost the same max, which is not all the usually that common actually between mains and OCs. This one sucked because I was kind of telling you before the show, this was one of the first weeks of Fab I hated more than anything because everyone knows I hate bidding a lot of money on players. Triple digits is a very difficult thing for me. I was going anywhere from like 160 to 190 on Ramirez, and I thought I was like overbidding by like $80. And I didn't. I got one share, and it was the one I bid like $88 for, where I didn't think I got – it's like my cheapest one, I think. So I got one share, unfortunately. I would have loved more. I just couldn't justify spending that chunk of my budget, even though I am truly a believer in how good Ramirez is and should be. It was very tough for me, Ben. So where do you sit on this? Because I understand the impact he can bring to a two-catcher league. I 1,000% get that. That's still a lot of Fab.
It is. I was going to ask you a question. Oh, yeah. I remember what it was. So do you think he's good to stay up on the Marlins the entire year, Ramirez?
I do. I've heard other shows. I think you're probably talking about Zach's show and some others. I think even RotoWire talked about it. That they're worried because, you know, you got Nick Fortes, who they'd have to basically DFA. That kind of situation. If Fortes stops Ramirez from playing every day, the Marlins are worse than I expected. Like, they're a garbage organization. And the reason I don't think they'll do it, Ben, is for the fact that he's either catching, playing, or DHing and hitting cleanup every day. If it's a guy that they're going to let Nick Fortes take over for, he ain't hitting cleanup. Let's just put it that way. So that's my two cents. Again, I've been proven wrong. I'm sitting here on a mic talking to you, which I enjoy. But the Marlins are like a handful of teams. We talked about it in our Discord. Like, we should have a draft for the worst organizations in baseball. They would catapult to the top if they sent Ramirez down, unless Ramirez goes like 0 for 90 or something. Like, there's zero reason, no matter if it slumps, to let Nick Fortes take this spot. So that's my answer to that. Again, could be proven wrong, but it would be one of the most foolish moves I've ever seen.
I agree. So I pulled up Roster Resource. They actually have him as the DH, and Liam Hicks has been catching 3 out of the last 5. So I
see Liam Hicks is a real 5 pick, so he has to stay.
All right. So I get, well, so they make Ramirez the DH, quote unquote, and then they have Hicks and Fortes kind of be the catchers, and then Augustine rotates in. So yeah, I'm sure. So he's probably gonna be safe, but I think my one bid I placed for him was 144. If listeners remember last week, I was big on Edgar Caro, who was a much cheaper version or cheaper option. Mm-hmm. And I think Edgar had better like average skills in the minors than Augustine. Yes. Augustine's more of the flashy power speed guy, the next JTR, or even Dalton Varsho when he was catcher eligible a couple years ago. But yeah, it's just tough for me to get too crazy on rookies now with the Fab bidding. It's just I've been burned in the past by spending massive chunks of my Fab budget on these guys, and they're not panning out because who knows, they're young. It's a tough adjustment going from AAA or wherever they came from to the majors. But yeah, I mean, that week he had was legit Ramirez. It's not as kind of funny. Well, the average is better, but it's, I don't know, value wise, who is better, him or Beck. It's kind of be cool to see on a player rater, But three homers from a catcher, and of course he did on Sunday of all days, just jacked up the price even more. Like a homer and a steal wouldn't have been enough going into the end of the weekend. But and he was in Seattle of all places. He had three home runs in Seattle. And I remember the one was like the upper deck in left field. He actually absolutely crushed it. So he looks legit. I'm kind of annoyed the Yanks traded him for Jazz after getting reminded of what the trade was on the broadcast tonight. But oh well, I guess we'll take Austin Wells and Jazz, who hit a combined 220 instead. But yeah, Ramirez seems like a stud, and if he keeps it up, he's going to be probably a top 100 pick next year.
Yep, I agree. Like I said, he's a top 10 catcher. If he just he's not going to be this good, obviously, but he's still going to hit like 260, and he's got 20-20 skills, which this is JTR, folks. This is what everyone used to draft JTR for. Like, it's who he is. So I think he is that darn good. As I believe it was Timothy in the chat and the Discord mentioned, the 10th catcher off the board this past season was Tyler Stevenson around pick 120. So just to kind of put that in perspective as we're thinking. I pulled up the Fangraphs player rater for the last 7 days, Ben. This is quite the list for the listeners out there. Just we'll scroll this real quick. Number one, Pete Crow Armstrong. Number two, Andy Páez. These are just hitters, by the way. Number three, Eugenio Suarez, because the quadruple dong. Number four, Jordan Beck. Number five, Jorge Polanco. Number six, Noelvi Marte. Number seven, Teoscar Hernandez. Number eight, Augustin Ramirez. Number nine, Trevor Larnach. And number 10, O'Neill Cruz. In the top 10, Ben, there is only two players in the top 100 ADP. There are four at 400, post 400, and six post 320 in the top 10. That's fantasy baseball in a nutshell, my friend. So that's a pretty wild list.
Gotta love those small samples.
Yes. That kind of goes to the point when people start spending a lot of money real quick in Fab. Like, yeah, just I should do now. I should do last 14 days and see where those same names pop up on the list, and then go from there.
Oh, man.
All right, next up here, we got a guy you were texting me about on Sunday night, and it worked out well for you, especially looking at these prices, Ben. It could have gone horribly the other way. Will Vest, potential closer in Detroit. I say potential. We'll discuss that in a minute. Picked up in 208 leagues, as high as 161, as low as a dollar in your OCs. In the main event, picked up in 36 leagues, as high as 313. That's a bit much. As low as 38, though. That's fair. I'll let you have the floor because I know you were interested in Vest. You went and got Vest. So what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I bid on Vest in two of my three main events. One was the one where I've been rolling out Seth Haverson as my RP2. Definitely could use an upgrade there. I did not get him in that one. But then I did bid on Vest in my main event that is, last I looked, was fourth overall. And that one, the reason why I went after Vest was because I have Justin Martinez. And I'll get more into that afterwards. But yeah. Seeing three saves from Vest this week definitely made me convinced that he's going to be the primary saves option in Detroit. When we talked about Canley in the past, I was very hesitant to buy in because of how he pitches. He just throws a changeup every time, and you could easily get crushed. Roster Resource has them both as a closer, which makes sense. I think that – let me pull it up right now. So Reliever Recon has Vest leading as well. So both sides have them in the timeshare in Detroit, but Vest is the leader now. And when you look at Vest's numbers, he's got 14 Ks, 4 walks, and 12 innings. So that's a great ratio for a closer. Only 3 hits allowed, so that's very lucky. I'm sure that'll come up eventually, but it's just – and people – so I think the problem is with the Tigers. It's not really a problem, but just the mindset was that there was no one obvious going into this year because, well, like Foley seemed like the obvious option, but he did have 28 saves last year or whatever it was for them. So it's not like Hinch completely spread it out evenly across five guys. Foley got a lot of saves last year for them. And I don't, so if like, it's kind of like with the Rays mantra. So people would always say that, oh, the Rays always have multiple closers, but when they find a good one, they kind of stick with them. So maybe that will happen with Vest. So that was the gamble that I took, considering that I did not want to lose Jamar potentially to something and only have one closer after that. But the prices are a little bit lower in the OC, which makes sense. The main event's definitely harder to find saves, But I think there's a good shot that Vess could get 20 saves the rest of the year and be a fine RP2. Well, I guess in an OC, it would be like an RP3 at that point, but definitely valuable either way.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan. On the Fab Show on Thursday, we each ranked our, you know, the potential closers to spec for this week and invest. I think I had like third on my list. I was a big fan. I agree with you. Canley will get some of his, but like Canley's saves have been multi-inning. So that stood out to me. Like when it was just a ninth inning save, to your points, Vest was called upon. And then you made a very major point that I've been kind of trying to preach wherever I can is yes, Hinch can be a pain in the ass. And yes, Hinch in the postseason mixed everything up. But in the season last year, like you said, Foley got 28 saves. Like he was the primary dude. And Hinch will roll with that. It seems like if he is happy with the way it is one way to put it. So I'm with you on this. I knock on wood, I still have faith in Devin Williams. So I wasn't really like reaching to get a bunch of guys. Like almost every spec closer was in waterfalls for me for pitchers. But I wasn't like as needed, I guess, as you were. You were in a situation you needed it. Like there's no doubt about that. So I was all for people getting him. I think for the immediate saves impact, it's like Cade Smith, Luke Weaver, and Will Vest, where Will Vest has more of the long-term as well out of those three. So, yeah, I'm with you. I support it. Like we talked about it via text. I full support on that one. I'm glad it worked out for you. Like kind of checking out the price tags. Now, my question for you, and maybe you mentioned it, I totally missed you saying it. Like he went for 313 in a main and as high as 161. Like where do you think the ceiling was if you were putting bids in, I guess?
What do you mean? Like what would I have gone up to?
Like how high would have been too high? Because like 313 still seems excessive, but that's just me because of my brain of not spending. But maybe they lost to closers or they're like and they're desperate for saves. That's like checks out then. I get it.
Okay. Like I think Frank 150 said, is like that. I think 150 is like the tipping point. Cool. Because it's not certain that he's going to get all the saves or like the percent is still uncertain, but the past week he's gotten, I don't know if he's got the last three, but he got like all three in a row that the Tigers got saves wise, but he's gotten three in 1 week. So that's kind of screams closer usage to me. And we'll go over my actual numbers, but yeah, it's I was on the high side, but considering my position and what I was trying to do, I was fine paying what I did.
Yeah, no, that checks out. So I agree with that. I hope it pans out. All right, here's Cade Smith. We talked about, we're going to have a few closers to discuss here now. Cade Smith picked up in 163 leagues, as high as 289, as low as $3. Picked up the three saves this past week. We know Emmanuel Clase, unless he is seriously hurt, will get his job back. But for now, it's Cade Smith's world. We're all living in it. So like he was near the top of my closing needs, if you needed them. It was towards the top of the list. Where were you at on Cade Smith this week?
I think he was already taken in the main events.
Yeah, maids. And, oh, man, AJ Smith-Shaver shows up first. Yeah, Cade Smith is only available in six leagues, as high as 242.
Right, yeah. So, and I don't think any of them were mine. But looking at the prices on in the OCs, I'm assuming that these teams have Emmanuel Clase. Because if I did not have Clase, I would not be bidding anywhere close to $200 on Cade Smith. I think it's just temporary, like we kind of said earlier. If anything, it's an insurance policy for the Clase owners. But I mean, he's filthy, Smith. So if he were to stay in the role all year, which is I think is very unlikely, he'd be worth a lot of money. But the way things are now, I hope those owners that got him do have Class A already, yeah. And they're just making sure they have the Cleveland share chance.
Good point. Good point indeed. Yeah. Quick question here. Frank says he's hanging on to Chris Martin in his main league. I think you can drop Chris Martin right about now. Like Luke Jackson's, I think, has to really screw up to lose that gig at this point in time.
I agree. I think Jackson did just blow a save, but no one wants to use Chris Martin as a closer, no matter where he is, unfortunately. He's a very good reliever, but he's not closer material for whatever reason.
And trust me, I am not a Luke Jackson guy, but that's where Bochy seems to be rolling these days. Speaking of Bochy, the Giants. Camilo Duvall picked up in 159 leagues, as high as 281, as low as $11. I've been actually mentioning Duvall the last couple of weeks in my fab work because his writing was kind of on the wall. It's still Ryan Walker's job. I want to emphasize that. I've had a lot of people ask me. It is Ryan Walker's job. But just due to usage, due to the Giants having a chance for 10, they each have five saves. And he has struggled a little bit, so he has to blow it a few more times. But Duvall's looked good, and the Giants always wanted Duvall back in the closing role. So when it comes to the OCs, Duvall's at 159 leagues, as high as 281, as low as 11. He's got the five saves, low ERA, two wins as well. Where were you at on Camilo Duvall?
I actually had him behind Will Vest in that one, in that main event where I got Vest. I had only for $32, though, on Duvall, because to your point, I don't see him being the closer, really. It was more like, okay, if I can't get these other guys who have a better shot at their jobs, okay, I'll get Duvall in case, whatever reason, he does become the closer again. This is more of a flyer. But looking at the prices here, 281 is a high. Kind of the same thing. I hope these teams that won Duvall have Ryan Walker, because that makes more sense just to sure up that you have a team's closer. I did start Duvall in my two DCs where I have him. I got lucky that I actually played him last year, so I got those three saves. That felt nice in that one DC, but I doubt that this would be like a shared role, right? It's going to be either one or the other, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, it's one or the other. Like, Duvall's been getting his because it's like the Giants are just playing a lot of tight games. So Walker will throw like two games. It's his night off. Here comes Duvall. And I guess just it's worked out for the most part that way. It's been maybe one time where Walker had to get balanced or it was like extra innings because he blew a save. For the most part, it's just been Walker's been unavailable for most of that action.
And even, yeah, I remember looking into Duvall and just looking at like how he's doing. 13 innings, only 10 Ks and 5 walks. So that's not a good ratio. So he's gotten kind of lucky with a 1.93 ERA and a 0.79 whip. So if he can just pitch his way to Duvall, I could see some rough outings every now and then. But five saves already is pretty crazy.
Yes, they both have five saves. That's nuts. Like, the White Sox still have one as a team. So keep that in mind. All right, we're going back to the bats now. Noelvi Marte of the Reds has picked up in 141 OCs, as high as 296, as low as 31. Marte has had himself quite the production in Coors Field this past week. Heading into Monday, he's hitting 364 now with three homers, four stolen bases, and 15 RBIs. It's been quite the turnaround after getting called up, not playing much, getting sent down. CES hits the IL. They bring him back, and now Marte can't get taken out of the lineup. So a lot of optimism for a guy that most of us liked last year. PEDs ruined that. He's back. He looks like he might be turning into the guy we hoped for. Where are you at on Marte?
Yeah, I missed on getting him everywhere, unfortunately. But I guess I'm making myself feel better by saying I think he had two at-bats in that one game off of position players against the Orioles when he hit the homer, too. And then, he had three games in Coors. So he had, what, seven hits and 15 at-bats? That's good. It's to be expected, but if you were to scoop him up, I it's nice to have someone with this upside because I was in on Marte a little bit last year. I would have been had he not gotten suspended, but I think I added him at one point and it didn't work out well either. But he does get the hit in Cincinnati, at least Marte, which is a good consolation to the core series. It's just what's he going to do over a larger sample? And looking at the K numbers, only 6 Ks and 44 at-bats. And I believe he had a very good hit tool in the minors. So it's good to see that he's not striking out a lot right now, Marte. And the steals are nice at third base. So I am a little upset I don't have him anywhere, but we have a long way to go to see if he's actually going to pan out or not.
Yeah, I had a ton of Marte shares last year, kind of was out this year with, not even going to be on the roster, essentially. And then I tried to get him back this week, and $40-something dollars wasn't going to cut it, Ben. So missed on that one. That's me just being a timid little, whatever you want to call it. I'll just leave it at that. All right, Andy Páez, another guy that I have a lot of. And I actually hadn't dropped much of him, so I'm pretty happy here. Still tried to get him elsewhere. Páez has picked up in 123 OCs, as high as 87, as low as a dollar. This is a guy that has caught fire over the last, week and a half to 2 weeks. Entered this week hitting 277, five homers, a steal now. Production's been through the roof, like I said, the last 7 to 10 days. I'm a big believer here. They're playing him every day. They're not platooning him. None of this garbage. This guy's legit in my mind, and as long as they keep playing him, this could be a big boy season for Páez.
It could be. I think my highest bid for him was $54. So in terms of the OCs, I probably would have been middle of the pack, a little bit upper. I'm not sure the price right now offhand on Well, the main event average was 72. Yeah, so I did not get Páez. I was beat out in that main event. Actually, it was by one. I was the runner-up. I'm looking at now. So whoever got him for 55, and I had 54. Oh, well. That happens. But looking at his Statcast, Páez, it's not the best still. I remember seeing that when I was looking at his underlying numbers going into the weekend. I think that was before the Sunday game as well. His XBA is only 215. Average exit velocity is only 87.7. That's 23rd percentile. Barrel rate's like mediocre, 8.3%, which is 49th percentile. Really the best thing on the Statcast is his sprint speed. And he's only has one steal, so he's not even putting that to use. Or
that happened last week, though, once he started hitting. So maybe, like, you got to be on base to steal.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're hitting homers, you're not going to have a shot to steal anything.
And before that, he wasn't getting hits. Like, so like, okay, then maybe we're going to see something now.
Yeah, but he – yeah, so that's just me just being okay, trying to make myself feel better about not getting him. But he was a pretty decent prospect. He is on the Dodgers, so I get taking a stab on him. But he was as terrible a start out before this. So he could just be a very streaky player and watch how he's going to go be terrible for 2 weeks again. But yeah, he started out 4-for-34, which is not very good. But 5 homers in the last 3 weeks is very good. And he only struck out once last week, which is very encouraging in 20 at bats. So yeah, I was a fan of Páez. It's just, the other thing that hurts too is he bats low in the lineup, but it is the Dodgers, so maybe they turn it over a few more times than other teams. But just something to think about as well.
Oh, for sure. Like, the Dodgers could always screw things up. I think right now they're just trying to field 5 starting pitchers and let Páez run as the goal. But yes, I agree. They still have James Outman. They have other options in the minors. It's just the embarrassment of riches the Dodgers continue to have. All right, a few more here. This was a big week. Porter Hodge picked up in 115 leagues, as high as 119, as low as a dollar. This one stings if you bid high. I'm just going to put this one here because I like Porter Hodge a lot. I think he ends up with more saves this season than Ryan Pressly. I'm kind of preaching that all year. Pressly came back on Sunday, pitched the 9th in a no-save situation, made it through there. I still don't think he's – you know, the knee's been an issue before. Getting your knee dragged doesn't mean you solved the problem, let's put it that way. So I think there'll be time for Hodge to have his moments this season and maybe take over it sometimes, Ben. But, like, right now, they're still going to give Pressly the job. And so if you're spending that kind of cash, you have to be willing to, I guess, stash in my mind. And that's a tough thing to do. But what were your thoughts on Porter Hodge?
Yeah, it was one of the other main event. One of my two, I think it was the Haverson main event is where I had a bid for Hodge just in case. Presley's older and hearing the kneading drain, it had me a little worried. Well, not that I have Pressly, but it makes you think that an IL is sin as possible. And at least compared to the other guys, Hodge only went for 119. As the max in the OCs, and I'm assuming that the people that got him were probably Ryan Pressly owners. So I get trying to back up the Cubs' closer situation, and I think that Hodge is probably a better pitcher anyway. I mean, doesn't have the best start to the year so far, of the almost a 5 ERA and a 1.23 WHIP, but it's just like a security blanket, I think, for most people. I'd assume it is, at least. But yeah, I was in on him, even though I don't have Pressly. I think it's a decent gamble to take at the right price.
Yeah, no, I like him a lot at the right price. Like I was saying, like 113 for a guy you have to stash is tricky, but if you could sneak him through for something a little cheaper, I think there's tons of upside. He'll get his eventually. He's got to be willing to be patient with that one. All right, a couple more here. JP Sears picked up in 113 leagues, as high as 85, as low as a dollar. Has the two-step this week. He's pitching real well versus Texas through 5 right now. He's got Miami this weekend, so it's a great two-step, a phenomenal two-step. And Sears has always been that guy, Ben. He might have a rough outing here or there, but for the most part, especially in deep leagues, dude ain't going to crush you. Like, he's going to give you relatively good outings, maybe pick your battles with the Sacramento situation now, but seemed like an easy move wherever available.
Yeah, I actually played – so I drafted him in a main event, or I added him, and I started him this week, Sears. So it's good to hear that the first start's going well, because that was a little bit riskier of the two. Yep. Sears has a – sub 4 xERA, a FIP of 4.14, and an xFIP of 4.36. So at least in 15s, that's going to play. What's the K percent? The K percent is 19.8. It's better than last year, which wasn't that good. Swing strike rate is pretty poor, though, 9% right now for Sears. But he's just like a streamer, so it makes sense that he was added a lot in OCs for the two-step, especially with the Marlins at the back end. So he'll probably get dropped a lot, at least in OCs. But in 15s, he's definitely someone that you would want as a bench streamer, which is what I've been doing. So he's a valuable piece.
I'd bench stream him at 12s personally, unless you have a better option. Because it's weird, Ben. I know people talk about finding starting pitching at 15s and stuff, and it is. I have a couple 12s where it's brutal. Like, keeping Sears is way better option than than what's available. It's some people are really, I'll give credit where credit's due, are locked into pitching right now, where you have to really dig deep and take some chances if you want to, you know, get ahead of the curve on that one. Speaking of this one, like Ryan Gusto picked up in 101 leagues, as high as 86, as low as a dollar. Pitched great since going to the rotation. He's made, I think, 3 starts back in the rotation now, Ben. He's got a start this week, but then Lance McCullers Jr. is expected back, and Gusto may head back to the bullpen. But just give it a, you know, a start or two and might get Gusto back in the rotation. But where are you at on Ryan Gusto? I like the skill set, but like in a 12, knowing he's like 90% out of the rotation after this, it was tough for me to get too invested.
Yeah, he was added widely in main events last week, Gusto, which is kind of usually the case with these fab shows. He was added in 15 this week in the main events. I just checked it just to make sure I wasn't lying when I said what I was going to say. But it's just for the Detroit start. And I wasn't in. So the underlying numbers look good for Gusto. It's just that, like you mentioned, I wasn't sure how long he'd be around. So I didn't want to waste too much fab on someone. And I think last week was Toronto. And he did really well. 6 innings, 1 walk, got the win. On the year, he has 23 Ks to 4 walks and 22 2/3 innings. Yeah, great numbers. It's just that it looks like he's going to get sent down potentially once McCullers is back, but who knows with McCullers. So yeah, it's definitely a great stream with Gusto. So I can sign off on that for sure.
Most definitely. We're going to skip over Brian Baio. He's back up. People are excited about him. That's the easy, but some people pay $311 for him. So to each their own, but we'll pass on that. I want to get your thoughts on Colin Ray, because he's a guy that 15's definitely added recently. He picked up in 92 leagues in OCs this past week. So still widely available, all things considered, as high as 45, as low as a dollar. Colin Ray, he's made 3 starts now since joining the rotation. Last time out against Philadelphia, 5 shutout innings with 7 strikeouts. The pitch count keeps going up, but it's been 2 earned runs over the 3 starts, 5 Ks or more in each of the starts, which when I think Colin Ray, strikeouts is usually not the thing I'm thinking of, Ben, but he's been quite effective here. Where do you sit on Colin Ray? Because like last year, he was one of those pitchers, anytime we did like a bloom board, or I think you and I would talk about things like the peripheral stats said he was way overachieving. But here he is doing it again in a small sample. So if you like it, you got to get ahead of it type thing. Where were you at in Colin Ray?
He was available in one of my mains, I believe, just one, and I did have bids in for him. I don't believe I got him. But yeah, to your point, he has a 9K per 9 this year, which is much better than he has had previous couple seasons. He was in the 7s. The K rate that amounts to is a 25%, which is much better. And he hasn't been walking guys, Ray. So he's a 3.9% walk rate. That's a 21.1% K minus walk. That's very good. Granted, it's a small sample like you're talking about. The swing strike rate for Ray is 10.1. So that kind of is in line with a 25%. It's within the realm of, okay, it seems sustainable. So who knows if it's going to last though, because he does have the history of not being a big strikeout pitcher. I'm not sure if there's a pitch mix change right now with what I'm looking at, but you never know. And who did he face? Colin Ray faced
Philadelphia's last start in Wrigley.
And he survived the Dodgers and Arizona before that.
And he gets at Pittsburgh this week. So now he's going to get up 7 runs in 2 innings because baseball. But it's a great matchup this week, so it made even more sense to the point.
It did, yeah. And he'll be in that rotation because they have a lot of injuries, the Cubs.
He gets the Giants. He gets the Giants the following week. And as much as I'm a Giants fan, their offense isn't like that scary right now. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess Hassad could take him out of the rotation, but
Hassad already had a setback. He's on his oblique injury. He's done for a while. It's Ray's world for the time being. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I don't know how I had it stacked out in terms of my priority, but yeah, I was definitely in on Ray.
For sure. All right. Edgar Caro was picked up in 88 leagues, as high as 112, as low as a dollar. We talked about him plenty last week. I had him basically in all my Ramirez bets. He was right below. I actually got another Caro share this week, so not too bummed about that. Tobias Myers picked up in 87 leagues, as high as 52, as low as a dollar. He returned off the IL this past week. He had a pretty good season last year. Another guy kind of like Ray, kind of smokes and mirrors at times, but he has the White Sox this week, and he has a 2-step next week. versus Houston and at Tampa, Tobias was to me a very savvy pickup if you could pull it off.
I think he was available at one of my main events. I did have a bid in for him for that stream this week. I don't believe I got him.
He was available in six mains, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot. He's kind of like Ray almost in terms of skills.
That's what I was saying. They were both kind of smokes and mirrors type guys last year. Their final stat lines were very fantasy worthy, but you were never comfortable starting them ever.
Yeah, Myers was much better, actually. He had a sub-3 ERA and a 1.17 whip. I forgot how good he did. Yep. Well, he was getting drafted pretty highly, Myers, and I remember looking at his underlying metrics. I was just like, yeah, I'm not really buying it too much. You know, it's just one of those things where he got kind of lucky and survived the full season. So, like his ERA was basically 3 last year, and then everything else was closer to 4, the estimators. So I feel like he would be that's kind of what you would expect from Myers going forward.
Most definitely. All right. I'm just going to name off some names, but let's get ready to just for the listeners here, but we'll talk about our pickups. I just want to mention to the listeners, Eric Wagman was a popular pickup, Josh H. Smith, Justin Slayton, Jake Irvin, Zach McKinstry, Trevor Larnach. Just wanted to mention those names because I wrote all of those up in the fab column. There were more 15 team names, but they're becoming very 12 relevant right now. Stop sleeping on them. If you want any information on them, let us know. But we do need to get to our pickups of the week. But a couple guys that are putting together some very 12-worthy production right now.
McKinstry for 160 is very eye-opening.
Very eye-opening, but like I dug into what I wrote about him this past week is, A, he's eligible pretty much everywhere you can imagine. But when you look at McKinstry right now, he ended the week. He's on a, where's it at here? 2, 3, 5, 8 game hitting streak right now. Sitting 321, only one homer, 2 stolen bases, 15 runs, 13 RBIs. Like, he's helping in a lot of categories. Not going to give you a lot of power, but if he steals, say, 13, 14 bags, the runs, RBIs, and the average, it's still asking a lot. I get it. But you, in a 12, you run that out while you can, especially with that flexibility. That's pretty tremendous.
Oh, yeah, I know about him. I have him in that main event that's in the top 5. Okay. So,
yeah, the price tag is a bit rich for McKinstry, but that's probably because you and I know the downside to Zach McKinstry as well.
He has no power.
Zero power. Like, he's better. I'd take him over Luis Arraez right now, not even with the post-concussion when he's healthy, but I'd still take him. I'm not an Arraez guy at all. Like, I'll take McKinstry in that battle all day. But
he's almost identical to Josh Smith. I think McKinstry has more speed.
And weirdly, I think Josh, well, the bar is not high. I think Josh Smith has more power too, which is, again, like I said, bar's not high, but I saw Josh Smith again. It was in Sacramento, so do with this what you will. I saw him hit a monster. He's got 2 homers already this year. And one thing with Josh Smith that surprised me, he's got his barrel rate back up to 6% so far after 3.7 last year. It's 10.5 the year before. And his hard hit rate's up to 40%, which is the highest so far of his career. Again, these aren't electric numbers, but it stood out to me because he's also got a ground ball rate of 50%, which is by far the highest of his career. And you're not getting barrels on that. So to be able to increase your barrels and your hard hits while pounding the ball on the ground half the time stood out to me that he's doing something that's improving, that at least, like, if he could just maybe go to 40% ground ball rate, like, there could be a lot of production there. So just my 2 cents. All right, let's talk about our ad drops, my friend. We'll let you kick things off here. What you got?
Okay. Let's go with the New Jersey main first. New Jersey main. I got Drew Waters, 22-4. Dropped Jake McCarthy. I don't know if we'll ever talk about Drew Waters on the OC, for the OC ads, but if he keeps playing and keeps playing well, maybe we will. I think he's filling in for MJ Melendez on the Royals right now. Another deeper league ad, I got Brooks Baldwin. I dropped Leody Taveras. Taveras suddenly stopped playing and hasn't really been doing well either. Brooks Baldwin has 3 homers and 2 steals, sneakily. He had a homer each of the last 2 weeks. He had a steal week 3, week 4. So, I mean, on the White Sox, he's going to play all the time. And he has multi-positional eligibility. I figured, why not? He was 18-9. And then I streamed Chad Patrick versus the White Sox, I think. I dropped Keeter Montero, 18-8. So some very deep league names there. Main event 2. So instead of getting Vest here, I got Calvin Fauché. Dropped Keeter Montero, 48-8. I think I don't know if I played. I was going to play Fauché, then I saw they're playing the Dodgers, so I left Halverson in this week. Figured, maybe more shots. Watch, Fauché is going to get like two saves on my bench.
I wasn't going to say it.
It's like, going to happen. Never fails. Yeah. Oh, well, I have him, though, just in case.
Yeah.
All right. Now, main event three, the one that's been doing really well. This is where I got Will Vest. I dropped Zach Veen. Luckily, I didn't have to pay any fab for Veen because I drafted him and held him. But so I won Vest. I think I said I was like the eighth or ninth highest winning bid in the main event, and 134 to 126. I was bouncing around. I think I had 118 originally. Then I went up to 138, went down to 126, and I went back up to 134. And if I had stayed at 126, I wouldn't have gotten him because I am in first in this league. So the tie would have gone to the team behind me. So I'm very happy I changed it back up. I got Vest because I kind of talked about it earlier. I have Justin Martinez. And although he got the save on Sunday, which I was happy to see, I didn't like how it looked, at least in terms of velocity and results. So I said, well, I don't want to be left holding the bag with just one closer if something happens where Martinez goes on the IL. So I'm like, well, I have to get Vest. And I actually played Vest this week over Martinez. Vest has seven games. Martinez has six. Yes, they're off today, the D-backs, but I could see them giving him a couple days of rest. And I didn't want to miss out on seven games with Vest potentially getting a save or two, hopefully. So that was that one. I was happy with the bid I ended up going with. And then I got Mike Soroka. I finally dropped Dean Kramer here, who I haven't been playing, luckily. But after having Kramer as one of my most rostered players, he's getting down to just like a DC-only player for me, I think. That was 24 to 12. I don't know if Soroka's going to actually pitch this week. It seemed unsure if he's going to make another rehab start or actually come up to the majors, but Soroka's getting close to being back. I actually had him on this team, and then I dropped him. And then in the Listener League, I got Mickey Moniak. 24 to 2. I thought he'd be a little more sought after. I dropped Veen here, and that was my only move there.
All righty. Active time here. All right. We'll start with my first OC. This is my one Nick Kurtz share. Got him for 131, runner up of 77. Ramirez went for 137. I was the runner up at 129. It's a theme in most of these leagues. I was the runner up bids on him. But I got Nick Kurtz, and then I got Gavin Lux, who I actually kind of like my next pickups, I think I like more than Nick Kurtz after all. I got Gavin Lux, dropped CES 22 to 12. Got Andy Pajes, dropped Kyron Paris 22 to 8. In 15s, I could see holding Paris. If you have room in a 12 to hold him, I still think he's going to be fine. I do love the skill sets. Big League Pictures are adapting to him. He has to adapt back. And I'm cool with it if they let him keep playing, but they sat him for two games for Tim Anderson. And then they played him on Sunday. And that's where I'm like, okay, in a 12, I'll take my medicine on that one, but just keep an eye on that. Paris might be a drop pretty soon. I still believe he's good. He's young. These are the things that take place. I added JP Sears, dropped Chase Dolander, $7 with no runner-up bid. Love the two-step. And then I added Cade Povich, dropped Osvaldo Beto. I thought about keeping Beto for the Miami start, but I grabbed Povich. I got him for a buck, no runner-up bid. I wanted him cheap now for two reasons. I loved what Povich did the last start. I was a believer in the offseason. He's got the Yankee start this week. It's just tough, but then he gets Minnesota next week. Minnesota horrific versus left-handed pitching. So I wanted to kind of like look ahead going, okay, I already got my kind of like Sears is like going to be one of my starters this week. So on and so forth, grab Povich for cheap now. And if he's pitching that start next week, he likely lines up for two starts the next week after that. So just kind of playing ahead on that one, for a buck. All right. The Beat Bubba OC. This is where Ramirez went for 175, runner-up 133, me. Nick Kurtz went for 127 then that league, runner-up of 126. That might have been me, too, unfortunately. So I got outbid on everything, but we already got Ding Dong City here in a stream. Dropped Clean Your Sheets, Gavin Sheets, because they faced a bunch of lefties this week. Picked up Ryan O'Hearn, $2 to none. O'Hearn already went deep. Picked up Lucas Giolito, dropped Chase Dolander, 1-0. Giolito coming off the IL. I'll take that for a buck all day. And dropped Osvaldo Beto in the sleeper for Cade Povich once again, 1-0. So really liked my cheap bids. I spent $4 this week and got O'Hearn, Giolito, and Povich. I don't mind taking that gamble for $4 any day of the week. All right, in one of my 250 standalones, this is where I got Ramirez, dropped Carson Kelly. This is annoying as hell. I got Ramirez for 146, Ben. Runner-up was 51.
I mean, you can't really fault yourself for that one.
Oh, I'm not mad about me doing it. It's just annoying. After all the other bids I saw, I'm like, God dang it. that was my only ad that week in that league. And then in the 250 Vegas league, I lost out on Ramirez, 157. I was the runner-up of 136 to our buddy Mr. Waddell. just got me good in that one. But I did pick up Edgar Caro in this league, dropped Carson Kelly, 17 without a runner-up bid. That's fun stuff as well. Bubba the Boom Listener Auction League, I got Alex Verdugo, dropped CES, 11-5. Picked up Ty France, dropped Lamont Wade Jr., 6-4. So a couple nice bids on that one. Oh, Ramirez went for 169, runner-up at 166. I was said runner-up in that one because I know I went heavy in that league. Didn't get him. In my OLAC, I got Ben Williamson of the Mariners. He missed Sunday with a back injury, but been playing extremely well. I needed third base help or corner infield help. I dropped Matt Mervis 6-0. I like Mervis's power, but that batting average is a massive drain to the squad. And then I picked up Jesus Tinoco, dropped Logan Allen 4-0. Obviously, Tinoco wasn't my priority, but that's where things ended up. And that'll do it. That is our my pickups for the week, my friend. Couple listener questions here before we head on out. You had one from the old Twitter sphere here from Brian Comprude. Are the things Ben saw to dislike Hunter Brown still there? great question, by the way, Brian. Great question. Not my burner.
It could be a lot of people's burners. It could be Corbin Young's burner. It could be pick your pick. All right. So the main thing I was out on with Mitch.
Yeah, you almost said Mitch Keller right out the gate. It's just ingrained into your brain now.
It is. Yeah. With Hunter Brown. Oh, man, that was completely unintentional. Was the swing strike rate? It was 10.3 last year. And I don't think even when Brown improved in the second half that the swing strike went up with his results. The big thing though, last I looked, it was over 12%. Now it went from 10.3 last year, the swing strike, to 11.9. That's a big jump. So I think that's playing a huge role in his success this year. Let me look at the K percentage. The K percentage for Hunter Brown, it went up a couple points.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost 30%. It was 25 last year. So I was seeing the 10% swing strike and saying, okay, the 25% K seems kind of high. He's increased the K rate. He's dropped the walk rate. So the K minus walk went from 16.7 to 24.6. So he's basically pitching like he's a different pitcher right now. The one thing is his average against is 189 and the BABIP is 267. Last year, the BABIP was 307. So he shaved off 40 points there so far. I think those like the main points. The ball percentage was kind of high last year, 37%. I don't know what it is right now, but it was walking fewer guys. It's probably lower. The zone contact was 84.3% last year, which is okay. This year it is 78.7. So he's missing more bats in the zone. So he's doing things better than he did last year. It's just one of those things where you either have to take a leap of faith for whatever reason. You see other stats than I was looking at or other things, but I knew he did pitch better in the second half. This is Hunter Brown we're talking about. And it's just, so he's not the same pitcher anymore. So if he was still Mitch Keller, it'd be a different story.
That's well said, Ben. Well said. You're very humble in that one.
Yeah. I'll take Jeff my L's. I don't mind.
Yeah, I just every time I cover Hunter Brown for like daily matches for HQ or something, I look at his numbers and I'm like, good God, he's getting better. Like this is crazy. Yeah. Like he's actually like probably like if in this offseason, if these numbers continue, Ben will look at those numbers and go, yes, he's not Mitch Keller. Those will be different than Mitch Keller.
He's what Mitch Keller was supposed to be.
There you go. It'll never end. It'll never leave. What's never dead will never be forgotten. Jeff Biddle has a question at Topanga. Jeff, in September, when you look back on this week, which was one of the crazier Fab weeks out there, who will you say should have been the focus of bids instead of Kurtz, Ramirez, and Vest? That's a great question. That is a very experienced player asking, like, who should we have been focusing on besides those three? I have an idea, but I'll give you the floor first. And you can do main events or OCs, whatever floats your boat.
All right. Yeah. So I went to the main event first. Looking at the list, see, it's hard to think about who could have been. So I don't have anyone off the top of my head, but I'm looking at the bid list right now. And one name that kind of sticks out is AJ Smith Shawver for some reason. He had a good match. He's facing the Rockies this week. He's got a two-step.
Tough matchups too.
Yeah. He was popular because of the two-step.
Hey, but... it's only one this week. It's at Colorado. Next week, Cincinnati at Pittsburgh.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's another pitcher. that we were talking about before. Maybe Emerson Hancock. He's pitched a lot better the last couple outings, and who knows what's going to happen with Gilbert and Kirby. So in his last two outings, Hancock has 11 Ks in 11 innings, only two walks against the Red Sox and the Reds, both in Cincinnati and Boston. So maybe he figured something out and he's able to take advantage of Seattle's home park, and Hancock's a great fab ad. So I'll go with Hancock. I think he's better suited than Smith Schauber right now.
Yeah, I'll use the OC list here, and mine, because he's well gone in your mains, but for OC teams, again, he was picked up in 123 leagues, as high as $87, Andy Pias. That'll be the name in OC. Is like when everyone's focused on the Kurtz, the Ramirez, the Vest, Pajes could be the guy that legit plays this 5 to 6 days every week for one of the best offenses in baseball. And he could put up a 15-15 season, maybe 20-15. I don't know. I think the talent's legit. So tons of power. Speed hasn't even shown up like you talked about earlier. Only one steal so far, and that seems to be what he's really good at. So I think this kid, sky's the limit, and we might just be scratching at it right now. So Andy Pajes would be the name that I would give Jeff for this one.
Another pitcher real quick, Ryan Weathers.
Yes, specking Weathers right about now if he continues to move in the right direction. I like that call very much so.
He's trying to blow out his arm again. He's throwing 99 still.
That's the only thing I'm worried about. Like, we were all in preseason. Things were great, of course. Increased velocity. Same JT again. Like, I loved him. Increased velocity. Boom. There goes all over again. Didn't have the surgery. Comes back throwing the same in his first three inning rehab start. Probably got 2 to 3 more rehab starts to go before we see him. But, you know, a third week of May return from Ryan Weathers potentially if you start stashing now. Good call. Very good call on that one. All right. We're going to wrap it up there, my friend. Week 6, fab in the book. Another, you know, we're just counting down the days. No one's counting, but you know what I mean. As we get cracking here throughout the season, any final thoughts before we head out?
No, just looking for enjoying baseball, and hopefully, well, it's always good when we have an exciting fab show, but I doubt it's going to be a lot more boring next weekend or next week when we come back, barring something unforeseen.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to match this. Like, there's always a few a year, but this is going to be one of the peak ones just because there are so many good options, and then guys just kept going ballistic over the weekend to raise their price, which between Marte, Ramirez, and Beck, they just kept hitting home runs. It was ridiculous. So your initial price was thrown way out the window by the time that came around. So we'll see. We'll see. There will always be pitchers. There will always be closers here and there throughout the season. But there's about 6 different closers to target and a ton of bats. It was wild.
Yeah, forget about the closers.
Yeah, tons of them. Make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDEntric. Until next time, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 762. Catch y'all later.